Good morning and good evening. Thank you all for joining us. Awakened Talks is a space where we share stories that help plant seeds for a more compassionate society while fostering our own inner transformation. We do this by holding collective conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life who inspire us to live in a more service-oriented way. And behind each of these calls is an entire team of service-based volunteers who help enable this offering and to allow us to hold this space. Today, our guest speaker is Shaheen Mistry, and thank you all for joining today's call. I request that we start our call with a minute of silence to anchor ourselves into this space. Thank you and welcome.
Sangachhatvam Sambhadatvam Sambhumanansi Janatam Deva Bhagam Yathapurve Sanjanana Upasate Samaniva Akutihi Samana Hridayanivaha Samaniva Akutihi Samana Hridayanivaha Samanamastu Vo Mano Yathavah Susahasati Sangachhatvam Samvadatvam Sambhu Manansi Janatam Samano mantra samitihi samani samano mantra samitihi samani samanam manah sah Chit me sham Sangachhatvam Samvadatvam Sambhu Manansi Janatam Deva Bhagam Yatha Purve Sanjanana Upasate Sangachhatvam Samvadatvam Sambhu Manansi Janatam.
Thank you, Bhumika, for that beautiful offering. And what a perfect way to open our conversation today with our special guest, Shaheen, on Awakened Talks. And before I hand it over to Nisha and Krishnan, who will be our moderators for the day, I would just like to walk you through the call flow. So over the next 50 minutes or so, Krishnan will engage in a conversation with Shaheen. And after that, we'll have plenty of space to engage with questions and comments and reflections from all of you. So I would request that at any time in the talk, you can send in your questions or comments either via the the comment box on the live stream page on which you are watching this conversation, or by emailing if that's easier for you, to ask, which is ask@servicespace.org. So at any time in the conversation, you're welcome to do that, and we'll sort of try our best to have your voice in the mix in this inquiry as well. And just a friendly reminder that we are operating in this usual framework and constraints of technology, so things do end up sometimes going a bit wrong, but we'll try our best to come back and resume things as soon as possible. So thanks a lot in advance for appreciating and adjusting to that. With that, I would like to pass it over to Nisha. Thank you, Nisha.
Thank you so much, Rohit, and thank you so much, Bhumika. Let us evolve together by working together and sharing together is very much the theme of today's talk, Awaken Talks in general, and the spirit of the speaker as well. So today's talk is titled A School for Life. And the broad themes we'll be exploring today, among other things, are do we work towards our inner calling, or does it happen to us? And is it possible to synchronize our head, heart, and hands in this mission? And what does true education look like in a post-pandemic world? To explore these with Shaheen Mistry in conversation today will be Krishnan Ranganathan. It's difficult to introduce someone as multifaceted as Krishnan, but I will try. Krishnan is a volunteer at heart, and his school teachers, who wrote on his report card that he's too talkative, may find it very hard to believe that he grew up to be a very introspective adult who walks the talk very mindfully. And Krishnan is currently working with Udyam.org. Udyam is a platform that has touched hundreds of thousands of lives of children, of youth, of tiny micro entrepreneurs. And at work, Krishnan is adored for his knack of holding the mission with intensity on the left hand and compassion for the team on the right hand, and balancing it both. And at home, he's adored by his wife Deepa for the quality time he makes for their twin daughters as well as his parents. And Krishnan's family has been living in Bengaluru for more than 100 years. And with that short introduction, I hand over to Krishnan.
Thank you. Thank you, Nisha. I don't think I've ever been introduced in such a fabulous way before. So thank you for that. If there is any bit of nervousness in my voice, it is because of just being announced as being talkative in class in front of Shaheen. All right. It is indeed my pleasure today to be introducing Shaheen Mistry, an educator at heart, a mother of two girls, a hobby painter, and an animal lover, amongst many other things. Shaheen, like many of us know, is the founder of Akanksha Foundation at Mumbai and the nationally popular Teach for India, which has impacted over a million children and has also virtually been the breeding ground for social entrepreneurship and educational initiatives alike. She is an Ashoka Fellow, a global leader for tomorrow at the World Economic Forum, an Asia Society 21 leader, and more recently, a Jamnalal Bajaj awardee for promoting Gandhian values. What is most striking to me about Shaheen is that in a seemingly impossible task of educating 320 million Indian children, she sees that as a magical opportunity of engaging with 320 million partners to create the greatest show on earth. And in this long and audacious movement, Shaheen wisely remarks that the biggest challenge is to find the strength and love in my heart each and every single day. Thank you very much, Shaheen, for agreeing to be with us today, and welcome you to this conversation, which I have been looking forward to over the last few days.
Thank you, Krishnan. Thank you.
All right. So Shaheen, I think I'm going to start with something in your profile that was very exciting for me to hear, and something that's very, very uncommon, very, very uncommon to see in people. And I'm referring to the fact about how you lived the first 18 years of your life across 13 different countries. Right now, while that may look like a data point for many, right, and can be consumed as numbers and data, there is definitely so much more to that experience than just that, right? And so I know I'm going to take you back many years in this memory, but tell us something about what those years were like, and what was Shaheen at the end of that period of the first 18 years?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, firstly, it's so beautiful to be here. I think anything that service space does, and I'm sure this will come up multiple times in our conversation, is done with so much care and so much heart that I just feel already my heart feels very full this morning. So thank you for having me here. Just a small correction, Krishnan, actually lived in 5 countries, but attended 10 different schools. So did move around a lot. I think, my childhood was one of just being so deeply immersed in so many different cultures, so many different people. I have a very outgoing mother who would invite everybody home. And so my memories growing up were being in many different school environments. I started out in a French school, then in an English school, then in an American school, in an international school. So many different school environments, many different people, lots of animals along the way. My brother and I used to pick up stray animals from the road. So I had a very, very happy childhood. I felt my life was deeply blessed in every possible way. And yet I think one striking thing about my first 18 years was a very intuitive understanding that was not the life of many people, even though I wasn't in that sense very aware of it. I lived very much in a bubble growing up, but something inside me kept saying, no, but there are children who are just like me in every way, except they're not, because of the lack of opportunity. And that felt very real and striking growing up, that unfairness in the world, the inequality of opportunity, both with children and also with animals. I think I saw it with both growing up.
Got it. Fantastic. And yeah, I think we will touch upon later on the pets piece as well, the animal lover piece as well during the conversation. It was good to hear about picking up pets from the streets and giving them care. That's fabulous. So one question, what was there a burning desire at the end of this period? Was there a burning need to do something about this? Because very quickly after this is when you started Akanksha, right? The period after this. So how did that happen?
I mean, I think, you know, that you can usually always point back to one sort of turning moment, and I have that as well. Like, I have very vividly in my mind this instant when I was visiting Mumbai and I was in a black and yellow taxi at a traffic light, and a few children sort of ran up to the traffic light, and that felt like the moment where I just wanted to do something and I wanted to be in India. But when I look back and I say, was it really that moment, or was it many, many, many things over the 18 years that led to that moment? I think it's probably the latter, Krishna. And I think, again, my parents played a very pivotal role. Mom grew up as a speech therapist. We had children often who had multiple needs in and out of our home. I had volunteered since the age of 12. I think that was very, very formative. So all my summers were spent volunteering either with animals who needed help or with children. I worked, you know, ranging from had volunteering experiences with autistic children, with children who were visually impaired. I think my trip back to India every summer were very formative as well. I was able to see very clearly the difference between the school that I was in, the opportunity I had, and the lack of opportunity that I saw often as I just moved around the streets of Mumbai. So I think many, many tiny actions and seeds led to that moment where I was 18 and I said, like, you know, why am I going back to the US? Let me just try and be in India and try and do something.
Got it. Yeah. So Shaheen, you've been a great proponent of love, compassion, and Gandhian values, both in life and in education. Right. Now, there are two parts that to this question. One, was there a very specific point or event from which this blossomed? And the second part of the question is, so when you try and translate these values into action in the education system today, what kind of challenges do you face?
Yeah, I mean, so to the first part, I think there are sort of two parts to the first part. One is that I think I have learned love and values more from the children we've served at Akanksha and Teach for India than from anyone else. My greatest lessons have been from the children who I've been truly, truly privileged to know. I think, Krishnan, when I came back to India, I came with, you know, well-intentioned, but with a lot of like ideas that very quickly got disproved about what it was like to live in poverty, what children, you know, which children were lucky and which children were not lucky. I had a lot of misconceptions, and I think slowly and steadily through everyday interactions, my children taught me what honesty was, what courage was, what love was, what acceptance was. And those moments were just incredibly profound. And they were everyday moments, you know, whether it's like a child one day looked at me and after a short break and a vacation, and I had come back and she looked at me with a big smile and said, Didi, you're looking so fat, you know? And I said, like, only a child, right, can so honestly tell you what is on their mind. So small humorous moments to very profound life-changing moments from kids. I think that was one. I think the second honestly has been the ecosystem that we are part of at Service Space. At that time, it wasn't even called Service Space. But I think my first trip to Ahmedabad, I remember so clearly. I used to take a group of Akanksha children to Ahmedabad. My connection with Manav Sadhana, the human beings that I met there, had a profound impact on me. And I discovered that impact more and more over time. And so I think, you know, the question that Nisha framed the call with, like, does inner transformation happen to you, or you know, is it something you work on? For me and my experience, it's honestly been a little bit of both. I think I've been incredibly blessed to have had people around me. As we're talking, one moment is coming to mind, and it was a moment where we were at the Sugad campus in Ahmedabad, and Jayesh Bhai was sitting on the lawn and he was pulling something out of the ground, and I went over to him and I noticed that he was pulling a few weeds out of the grass, and then he just stopped and he looked very troubled. And I said, Jayesh Bhai, you know, why are you looking so troubled? And he said, you know, inside me, it's not feeling right to pull the weeds out. And so there were many of these like little moments that I was able to see and observe in the people around me. And I think that just made me feel like that's how I want to live my life, with that level of awareness, that level of love. And I think more recently, love especially, I think there are many Gandhian values, but for me, the all-encompassing value of love just feels just so important in the world today. And love in all aspects, starting with love and acceptance of self, love for the people we work with, the children we serve, the vision of the work that we do. It just feels like that can take us perhaps further and make the journey much richer than not having it. So that's the first. The challenges to living it, I mean, you know, I just feel like there are challenges whichever direction you take and however you live. And so it's better to face challenges living the values that you believe in that help you to sleep well at night than not. And so again, a big turning point, I was not like this at all, but a big turning point for me was just starting to see challenges a little bit differently over time, and it still remains a struggle, but really being able to see them as something that will come and something that will go and something that you can really sort of elevate yourself beyond to make sense of, or to try to make sense of. And so yes, many, many challenges along the way, but not significant enough to stand in the way of the journey that I want to live.
Beautiful, beautiful. And I think one takeaway or learning for me from this part of the conversation has been that last part that you said, it's better to face challenges living the values that you believe in. It's powerful. So Shaheen, when we talk about changing ourselves in order to change the world, right? As we set out to change the world, we often also talk about it in conjunction with what we call as ripple effects, right? That some of these, there is a high possibility of them creating ripple effects. Now, in your experience, tell us about if you had the opportunity to notice some of these ripple effects firsthand in your years of experience, either at TFI or outside or in a personal space. Tell us about if you've noticed any of these.
Yeah, I mean, two things are coming to mind. One is a moment many years ago when I didn't know Nipun as well, but you know, I at that point still believed that I was in search for the one big thing that would change education and therefore change the world. And I remember Nipun sitting down and talking to me about the power of small things and not big things. And over the years since then, I went from believing that I could change the world to believing I could change India to like believing I could change, you know, the small organization around me, to actually realizing that I can't even really change my two daughters at home. And really the only thing I can do is focus internally. So that's been a very, very big journey of really having faith in that idea, which I think I brushed off when Nipun said it all those years ago, that it is sort of the little acts and the little words that add up and do over time sort of overwhelm the world. So that's the first thing that came to mind. The second actually is much more recent. So last night, I sat sort of covered with goosebumps because it was the graduation ceremony of one of our students, and she was graduating from a very well-known university in the US called Franklin Marshall, and her graduation ceremony was online. And I remember just watching, and the reason for the goosebumps was just understanding like what a journey it had been for her to navigate the challenges to get to that place. But equally, what a symbol of hope in these times, that with opportunity, like children can just go on and unleash their greatest potential. But it wasn't actually the academic achievement that gave me the goosebumps, but the fact that this child has created like the most unbelievable ripples already in the world just by the way that she lives her life. And one moment that comes back to me as we speak that I think is illustrative of this is at one point in the journey, we took our children to a home for elderly people in Mumbai, but also people who had lots and lots of physical deformities. And it was very difficult for young children to go into the home and see that. And we decided to do an experiment with our kids. And we said, for the next hour and a half, just go and find anybody in the home and just talk to them. And we said, no questions, just go and do this. And I remember Priyanka went to a lady and started talking to her with a lot of arm gestures and movements. And a couple of minutes later, I walked past and I realized that both of them didn't speak the same language. Like they had no language in common. And I said, this is going to be fascinating. Like how long is she going to sit there and actually be able to speak to this lady? But 1.5 hours, they sat together and smiled. And at the end of it, there were hugs. Anyway, fast forward, we left the place and went back 3 months later. And when we went back, Priyanka had taken a bar of chocolate for this lady because she was fondly remembering her. But Priyanka also had with her on that day a teddy bear that had been really sort of a very important teddy bear to her, which represented a real security to her. And so when she went to this old lady, she had the chocolate bar in one hand and she had the teddy bear under her arm. And I think the old lady mistakenly thought that she had brought the teddy bear for her as well. And so in that moment, Priyanka had to decide, do I give her just the chocolate bar or do I give her this teddy bear, which to me represents so much? And she hesitated for a moment and then she gave her the teddy bear. And that evening I spoke to her and I said, Priyanka, I said, you look a little bit troubled. And she said, yes, Didi. And I said, why? I said, such a beautiful thing you did, you know? And she said, no, Didi, she said, if I really understood compassion, I would not have hesitated for that moment. Wow. And she was 14 at the time. And so, you know, you can sort of play the story out, but I think when children grow up wrestling with and practicing the values that matter to them, there is just a very powerful ripple effect in the world.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right. Yeah, I think for a 14-year-old to have that sense or that sense of connect, I think it's hard to say how much of it is natural, gifted, and yeah, but it's just beautiful.
Yeah. But you know, I found that like, it's actually, I mean, the experiences that we surround our children with and the role models that they have in their lives, like children naturally want to do good and to be good. They get so much excitement out of doing good and being good. And that's been one thing we've just observed again and again at Teach for India.
No, absolutely. I absolutely agree. At the same time, there is also a deep sense of attachment for children to their toys and to those pieces, right? And being able to give that away, I think is phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like I struggle with my kids if they have to share their toy with someone else. So being able to give that away and for good is like a phenomenal move. All right, so I'm going to move to one of my personally favorite themes. And it is the theme of serendipity, right? While we all plan our lives in a certain manner, and this is, or whether it is short term, medium term, long term, there is the part where life has its own plans for us, right? In some of the pieces, what kind of a role has serendipity played in your life, in your journey so far, both on the external front, on the work front, and in terms of your inner transformation itself?
Yeah. So, you know, my colleagues will share, if you ask them, that I'm not a very good planner. I think, you know, more than serendipity, I think for me, instinct has been a really big driver of many of the decisions I've taken. Some of them have turned out good, some of them have turned out not so well. But I can really sort of attribute a lot of the different directions that my life has taken to a sudden, I don't know, maybe there is internal serendipity, I don't know, but like a sudden instinct that is telling me, like, go this way, even if, like, logically it doesn't make too much sense. And so that I feel is a pattern. I do feel between my head, heart, and hand, my heart usually is the driver of how I take decisions and how I live my life. So that's one challenge, of course, I think has been another thing that comes to mind, as you say, serendipity. I think it's been a driver of many changes in my life as well. And then it just, I don't know. I mean, we think a lot and we talk a lot about flow. And I think you start, as you get older, becoming just a little bit more aware of actually how little you can control, like, even if you want to control it. And I do think as a younger person, I had a very high need to control. Still, like, my instinct is to want to do things really well, to, like, want to know what the outcome is. And I know that's been a very interesting conversation with many people in the Manav Sadhana ecosystem as well, that, like, is it about the journey? Is it about the outcome? And I think I've shifted a little bit towards the journey side, but not fully, for sure. I think I'm still very rooted in, like, a direction, but then understanding that the direction's not going to be like a straight path. It's going to go up and down, and a lot of that is outside of your control.
Fabulous. Interesting to hear that. All right, I'm going to switch to, I think we're all in the middle of one of the largest disasters we have seen over the many decades. I'm going to switch to talking about the pandemic and the impact it has had, and it is still having on the educational ecosystem. In the meanwhile, just want to quickly remind our viewers, please send in your questions either through the chat or through ask@servicespace.org. That's the email ID you can use to send in your questions. Otherwise, you can post them on the chat. Over the last year or so, I think we are aware, we have witnessed some unprecedented changes in education and learning, Shaheen. And wanted to understand, how have you, as an educator and as someone running various impact initiatives, processed all of this? Like, what did it take for you to, because the way the pandemic hit and what life was before and life became after, there was a significant shift, right? And especially for you running TFI and Akanksha, how did you process all of this?
Yeah. So Krishan, I'm not gonna dwell upon the many challenges. I think the audience is aware, and of course, like, this year has been an even bigger eye-opener on the difference that a skew of opportunities means for children. Undoubtedly, I think the pandemic has hit all children, but it hit my children at home very differently than it hit my Teach for India children. And so, yeah, I'm not going to dwell upon that. I do think, like, for me, there were several moments in the year where honestly, I just felt a little bit stupid that I hadn't seen very obvious opportunities in education that the pandemic suddenly made very clear. And a couple of these, one actually, one of my students pointed out on a call somewhere in the middle of the year, she suddenly said, Didi, she said, you know, I realized just now that like learning doesn't happen in a classroom. And that was one of my biggest learning this year, right? That like, I mean, it's such a beautiful title for this talk that you all chose, The School of Life. But that was one of my big learnings, that like you learn everywhere. And when I look back at my own life, I can point to a very small amount of learning that happened in a classroom and a huge amount of learning that happened from life, right? So the opportunity there to say, how can learning stop when literally just the four walls of a classroom close down, right? There's something wrong in our system and our world when that happens. So that was one big moment. The second moment, equally, like, again, obvious and stupid in retrospect, was why does learning only happen to why does learning only need to happen with the teacher who happens to be at the front of your classroom, right? So if you're lucky and you have a transformational teacher, you're lucky. And if you have a terrible teacher, you're unlucky. But like, you're basically, your life is determined by the human being in front of the classroom. And suddenly the pandemic sort of challenged that, right? And it said, no, actually, your teacher can be anybody. And your teacher can be sitting on the other side of the world, and your teacher can be a student who is 5 years younger than you. And like, you know, anybody can teach and anybody can learn. And by the way, like, learning doesn't just happen from teachers, it happens at home from parents and from your community and from the life that you live every single day. And so that was, I think, you know, the beautiful African concept of Ubuntu came alive for me very much this year, that like, yes, it takes a village not just to raise a child, but it takes a village to educate a child as well. So those were two big opportunities. I think that the enabler that technology can be, despite, you know, all the research, which is really mixed right now on whether like we can roll out technology at scale, whether it will make a difference, but the enabler that it can be, was a very powerful opportunity, right? The idea that, you know, maybe there are things that are better done in person in a classroom, and maybe there are things that are better done using technology. And if we can really find the right blended approach, maybe all children can have the opportunities that they need, and opportunities don't get that skewed. So that's really what we at Teach for India, we've been thinking very, very deeply about, that let's not like, you know, run around and try and find like apps on smartphones as a band-aid solution, but let's really step back and thoughtfully reimagine what a blended approach could look like, even when schools reopen. And how can a blended approach allow us to move from teaching a classroom of children to teaching individuals, because we all know that like each one of us has such different needs. So those were some of the big learnings. And then the second learning, slightly different, but won't be surprising to you at all. And perhaps my most powerful learning, and again, a very obvious one, you know, for years I've been thinking about collective action and community and the power of community, and have always believed in it intellectually. I think this year I really felt it in my heart in a way in which I've never felt it before. Like, I have never been as proud of our extended community as I have this year. It's been just phenomenal. I think everybody listening to this will have their own version of this, but to see people's vulnerability in being able to reach out for help and to see people sort of jumping in to help. You know, again, Nipun, in a conversation years ago, a lot of these concepts came to me as intellectual concepts, what a gift economy is.
Yeah.
But I think this year, like, we saw a gift economy, right? We saw when people were stronger, they were reaching out and supporting. And when people were weaker and needed help, they were reaching out to receive. And so the way that giving and receiving has spread in the world and the power of community, I think a lot about that. And I think a lot about that for our children, that, you know, we leave our kids with math and science and, you know, some amount of good values, but do we actually think in our goals that we need to leave our kids more than with anything else, with a strong community of people around them that will help them navigate the ups and downs of their lives and always be there? And, you know, my mind goes to a very dear friend of mine who was an Akanksha teacher in early days, called Anjali. And, you know, her children, I mean, they've been out of school 15 years now, are still on a WhatsApp group and reaching out to each other for help and to share achievements. And, you know, that community is still alive all those years later. And I think that's one of the most powerful things we can give our children.
Wow. Wow. Okay. I think at the end of this short piece, there are at least three things that are staying on my mind. One is the aha moment that you mentioned around the kid speaking to you and saying, "Oh, learning doesn't happen in the classroom, and it happens outside." That was a real aha moment. I think the second is the last part that you mentioned around how it's important to leave children with a community around them, right, which they can connect with closely. The third is, in fact, a comment and a question, maybe a follow-up question as well, Shaheen. It was interesting how you brought up the topic of technology and the blended approach with technology, right, which we might have to take going forward. How much of a mindset shift is needed or has been needed for that over the last 1 or 2 years? Or do you think the pandemic has made it easier to create that mindset shift?
Yeah.
I've also seen a joke floating around, which I think is true in many organizations, that the coronavirus is the new CTO or the CIO of your company.
Yeah. I mean, the pandemic has definitely helped, I think, for sure. It's, I think, given an impetus to that shift. I think it's going to be an uphill, long journey, Krishnan, but I think it's one we need to get on really soon. There are massive issues with just procuring hardware, with retraining teachers. I think kids pick up technology very quickly. I think it's more the barriers around them, right? Like parental investment, upskilling teachers, rethinking our school schedules and timetables to enable technology. And of course, just the cost and logistical nightmare of rolling out technology to 320 million kids. So I think it's going to be a long journey, and I think it's going to require many, many mindset shifts, and not just mindset shifts, I think a lot of reskilling to be able to do it. But, you know, I've never seen inequity as deeply as I did this year with children, where high-income kids, my own included, like literally migrated overnight to virtual learning, to the extent that I've heard so many high-income kids this year sort of question even the need to go to school, because they're so plugged in now with world-class learning that, like, the digital space for them is as important, it's gonna over time become more important than even the textbook, right? And so if we're not thinking about digital access and a blended approach for our most vulnerable kids, the gap is just going to get wider and wider and wider. Like, I don't think hardware and technology, even 3-5 years from now, is just going to be as important as learning to read and write. So while, yes, I've seen the difficulty, like even in a small organization like Teach for India, Krishna, and I've seen the uphill task of raising money for hardware, reskilling teachers, all of these aspects, it's not easy to do. And at the scale of governments, it's going to be really tough. But I think we need to start thinking, planning. We need to embrace that new reality going forward.
Got it. All right. So what do you see coming out of all of this, right? Are there, and maybe I will talk about this more in a cultural sense, right? Do you see a cultural shift happening in how education and learning happens going forward, or people's approach towards education and learning going forward? Is that here to stay? Is this a temporary, or how much of this is temporary and how much of this could be a longer term shift?
Yeah. I mean, you know, whether it's here to stay is like in each one of our hands to decide. I think it needs to stay. I think some of these changes need to stay. But I think we need to like jump on board. And change is difficult. And it's very, very difficult in a country like India with our diversity and our scale. But my submission would be like, let's jump on board and let's figure it out together. I think we figured out a lot together over this last year. I've seen collaboration happen across organizations in ways that feel really beautiful and really important. And I think if we do come together and put our strengths together, we can sort of embrace this new reality and plan well for it. You know, I'm not espousing like tomorrow, Mumbai government go out and like buy hardware and like distribute it to all children. I think we need to get to that place, but we need to do it thoughtfully and we need to prepare people well. And I think the other aspect of culture that needs to be, I think, a new reality is just parental involvement and student involvement in their own education. I think I've seen beautiful evidence of that this year, right? Where I guess, especially with younger children, parents were the primary teacher. And yeah. While like, yes, that needs to lessen over time and the school needs to come back for sure. How do we not lose the beauty of that? We've seen students reaching out and teaching each other, the power of peer-to-peer learning, involving students in the whole process of their own education and the education of others. How do we hold that going forward as well?
Got it. I'm going to do one more question, Shaheen, and then maybe we'll look at questions coming in from the audience, from viewers across. This one is really more in terms of, so if we look at children going to school in India today, we know that more than half of them go to government schools, right? And we also know the kind of impact these children have had over the last 1 year or so. It's almost like losing a year of education in school, or at least school-based education. Do you see long-term implications of this? For these kids and for the country, or what is the extent of damage in your individual perspective because of this?
Yeah, I mean, my perspective is that we have no idea of how damaging this year has been on children, and we need to do whatever we can with minimum risk to get kids back to some kind of physical interaction. Like I'm a big believer that kids go to school for many reasons. Content and academics is one, but it's not the only driver of why we go to school. And I think the kind of anxiety kids are facing today from a lack of socialization, a lack of a space to actually be with others, is a huge, like, damaging aspect to all of this as well. And so my very strong opinion is we need to, again, as civil society, work very closely with governments and follow medical advice and medical research and open schools safely, not in the way that they used to be, but even like one touch point a week for kids is going to make a huge difference going forward. I don't think we can afford to keep schools closed for the next couple of years. And I think there are ways to do it, you know, bring in small groups, 25% attendance in schools. But I think we need to really put our heads to that.
Got it. Yeah. And it is a difficult situation to be in. And I do resonate with you when you say that it is hard for us to imagine what's the extent of damage done. At best, what we can do is do what you can to get it back, get it back to the earlier shape it was in. And I think there are a bunch of people trying to make efforts in that area, even if it is tech enabled, or because it's very hard to get them to the classroom in the current scenario, and there are external factors influencing it. It will be interesting to see how best we can deal with this situation and get them back into the normal routine. That is going to be one of the toughest challenges. I also do think for the government school kids especially. All right, so I will hand it over to Nisha in a minute. Before that, I am going to cheat a little bit and for my own curiosity, Shaheen, ask you a couple of quick things. Tell us about Shaheen the parent. Shaheen the parent, like.
This is a question you should be addressing to my kids directly. But I think for me, I've always felt very like pulled in multiple directions, and like I've never got it fully right. I think for many years, when I was at work, I was worried about my kids. And when I was at home, I was worried about work. And there was a lot of guilt associated with that for a large part of my career. I think one day I just shed the guilt, saying like, it's not a helpful emotion. It's not helping my kids. It's not helping my work. And I think what led to that, actually, one of my biggest role models is my very dear friend, Anu, who was also the chair of our board for many years. And I remember her, she's had many stern conversations with me that have been life-changing. But one particular one, she sat down and looked straight at me and she said, "Do you think you're a superwoman?" And it really shook me, you know, because actually I sort of thought that I was trying to be a superwoman in my life. And she said, like, never try to be a superwoman. You know, she's like, all of us have two sides to us. We have the ordinary and we have the extraordinary. And when we're too ordinary, we need to seek the extraordinary. And when we feel we're too extraordinary, we need to pull ourselves right back down to the ground and remember that we're ordinary. And I think letting go of that idea that I need to be a perfect mom helped me actually counterintuitively become a better mom. I think where I hopefully have been a good parent is in the example of how I've lived my own life. I think where I could have been a much better parent is in the time that I spent with my kids growing up. I felt a lot of drive to serve children who I felt had less than my own children. And I think I compromised many moments where my kids probably needed me growing up.
Beautiful. All right. We are at 10:58. I am going to quickly hand it over to Nisha to take on some of the audience questions. Thank you, Shaheen. It was fabulous having this conversation with you so far. And let's see, if we get a few minutes in the end, I will come back to you.
Sure.
Nisha, over to you.
Thank you, Krishnan. Thank you, Shaheen. was quite illuminating for me as a mother and a homeschooling parent, and also got some ideas for our homeschooling community. And we would like to start off the audience questions with a blessing from none other than Jayesh Bhai, who's the founder of ESIN Manav Sadhana and also one of the mentors for Shaheen. He says, deep love for Shaheen, and I bow down to her spirit of service and kind, compassionate soul. Grateful for our connection. So that's from Jayesh Bhai. And Shaheen, maybe I will start off with a question of my own. In one of your interviews, you had talked about looking at an issue or a problem by holding a mirror instead of a magnifying lens. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. That actually, you know, we had some trainers many years ago come to us from the KIPP schools in the US, and they had introduced this concept. But I thought it was a very beautiful concept. And basically the idea is that when a challenge hits you, you always have a choice. You can pick up a magnifying glass, which is what usually our tendency is. And when you pick up a magnifying glass, you see the problems as outside you. And you tend to externalize. And very often, those are real. Those are real challenges and real reasons. But you also have a choice to pick up a mirror. And when you pick up a mirror, you look at yourself. And when you look at yourself, you start asking, like, what can I do about it? Like, irrespective of whether I cause the challenge or problem or not, really the only thing I have control over is myself and what I can do about it. And so we've often used this with teachers. You know, when a young teacher has a very bad day in class and they come back, and there are 100 reasons they come up with, which are again valid, right? Maybe the parents aren't that invested. Maybe the kid wasn't paying attention. Maybe, like, you know, the school environment wasn't strong enough. But we say, like, if you pick up the mirror and you ask yourself, what can I do about it? You'll go back a little bit more empowered tomorrow, and maybe things will start to shift.
Thank you. Thank you. And there is this question from Satish. He says, we are students of life. When can I say I have graduated?
I mean, that's a beautiful question. I think my instinctive reaction to that is never. You never graduate from the school of life. And I think, like, again, Anu is coming back to my mind now. At her age, she is such an active, like, and curious student of life. And that's such a powerful reminder to me that, like, we just keep learning and changing. And if you can keep that curiosity, and more than even curiosity, if you can keep that sense of wonder alive, you know, just wonder at the world and understanding it, and wonder at understanding yourself, I think you always then stay in the school of life.
So maybe it's better to stay in the school of life than to graduate. And a question from Vipul. Dear Shaheen Didi, you've inspired thousands of us to work with children and engage with the education field. So much gratitude for that. My question, if and how has your vision of excellent education and approach towards transformative teaching learning evolved over the years?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I think as a teacher, when I was much, much younger, at 18, when I started teaching, I think a lot of my instincts on what education really is and the purpose of it are not that different from where I am today. But I think along the way, I sort of lost the way a little bit. I think I got a little bit caught up in Well, it is about like academic rigor, which I do believe is a part of it. But I think some of those initial concepts that I knew to be so important when I was a teacher, right? That education has to be fun. Like kids have to love learning. That you have to build like 20 different methods into your lessons so that you reach every last learner. That like education doesn't just happen in the classroom, but I remember as a teacher, I used to pick up my children from the community every day and we used to like read like the hoardings on the way to school to practice reading. And we used to sing songs in the bus to start our class. And so I think a lot of that is true today. I think I'm able to articulate a little bit more clearly what I believe the purpose of education is today. And I think this is, of course, will continue to evolve. But if you ask me today, I think education is about self, it's about other, and it's about country and world. And in the self bucket, it's really about discovering who you are, discovering what your greatest purpose is, discovering and building the skills to live the kind of life that you want. So that for me is the self piece. And I think in India, you know, we have a narrow understanding of self in most of our schools, which is really like education is about a job. So expanding the self bucket. I think education is also about the other. It's not just about like, it's not just about me and the life I want to lead, but what am I doing to provide opportunities to those around me so that they can lead the lives that they want to lead, so that their potential is fully unleashed. And so other is about the way I am with others in the world, but it goes beyond that. It's also about like the opportunities I create for others to unleash their potential. And finally, the India and world bucket is about like, you know, can education be really the playing ground to understand what I want to shift, small or big, and to practice what it means to shift it. So that I'm committed to leaving my country, my world, a little bit closer to my own dream of where I want it to be. And I think, you know, if kids came to school every day thinking like, that's why I come to school. Like I remember teaching a class once, I think it was a grade 5 class, and I did a session on the purpose of education. And I remember their eyes lighting up when I said like, what if you came to school every day thinking, I come to school not to like do well on my math test, but I come to school to make my country and my world better. Like, you know, and the kids got so excited by that concept. So I think the balance of self, other, India is really important in the definition of education.
Wow. It really spans the intellectual, emotional, and social dimensions, and with a very strong be the change lens for the child. It's amazing how you inculcate these at such a young age. I think the next question is also connected to that. It is from Ankita. Ankita runs the Fountainhead School in Surat, and she asks, how do you imbibe the value of personal transformation among TFI fellows and your team?
You know, again, I'll go back to, I think children are our greatest teachers in personal transformation. Like I realized very, very early on that you can't teach kids to be respectful and then shout at your kids, right? Like they are every minute watching what you do, what you don't do, what you say, what you don't say. And I think that's one of the hardest things about being a teacher is it is a journey of becoming a better human being, and your kids are there on that journey with you. So I think really just helping teachers see that, see and deeply understand the importance of being a teacher, right? I often tell fellows that like, in what other job do you leave a legacy in the minds and hearts and souls of people, right? That's what you do when you're a teacher. And it's such a profound legacy you leave. So I think what helps our fellows is one, like reorienting and understanding education to be something much broader, much more profound than they potentially thought it was. And to understand their role as being just very, very important and transformational, and not a role where you have to be a perfect teacher, but a role where you're on the journey of learning with your children, right? And when you make a mistake, you can stand up in front of your class and say, sorry, I messed up. And your kids will accept that. So I think that helps. I think the other thing that helps is really creating safe spaces for teachers to talk and be vulnerable. So we do activities like life maps where circles of trust, people just talk. They're able to talk about things that they've done well. They're able to talk about things they're ashamed of. They're able to talk about their greatest challenges. Can you create spaces for teachers that feel very, very safe? And I think when you're able to do that, they are then able to do that in classrooms with children. And I think it's one of the biggest things that is needed in the world today. Spaces not just where I can be safe, but where I can create a safe space for someone else. Not just to voice what's on their mind, but to be who they really are. And that it feels like there are too many walls we've put up in the world today between us. Can we break those down just by dialogue and by understanding? And if I might, I'll just share one thing that came to mind right now. One of our fellows started a very beautiful concept called the Gufta Goo Circle. And what he did was he just brought together very unlikely people every 2 weeks in a school. And I was in one of these circles where there was a second standard student. The lady who swept the floors of the school was there, the principal of the school, the local cooperator. So very motley group of people. And all that happened in that circle was people shared aspects of their life story with each other. And there was no response. There was no question answer. There was just listening to each other. And I remember after the lady who swept the floors of the school, she shared and she shared that, you know, I've been offered by 3 or 4 other schools a higher salary, but I will never leave this school because in this school, everybody looks me in the eye and knows my name. And I remember seeing the principal of the school's eyes tear up because I think she never understood how important that act was. And so I think that's an example, Nisha, of just like, can we find very simple spaces, circles to really listen to each other as far as possible without judgment and with acceptance?
It's beautiful, Shaheen. I'm a little moist in my eyes because it reminds me of my dad. He was a teacher and a principal. He used to have circles after school. After school, when all the teachers would rush out home because they have to pedal their cycles and go maybe, you know, 10 kilometers as it was in those days. And my dad had to do that too. But he would just sit with all the vulnerable kids for an hour. He was also offered teaching positions at many schools, but he chose to work at a school which was closest to few slums in my hometown, Trichy. So, I totally resonate with the safe space. And I think we'll take a couple of more questions. One question is from Nithya Sriram from Singapore. With the pandemic moving a lot of education online, would this create space for volunteers outside India to help?
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer is yes. I think we've seen beautiful examples of people reaching out from all over the world. And again, I think the issue behind that for low-income children is the issue of hardware. How do we provide access, stable internet? Those have been some of our biggest challenges. But I think if we're able to make progress on that dimension, and able to really find ways to connect people that want to help with the needs, then that is certainly, I think, possible.
Yeah, thank you. And the next question is from Shivani Shah, a fellow of cohort 2021. What is the one most important thing we, this year's fellows, need to keep in mind when we are still struggling with this pandemic?
Yeah. I mean, that's such a beautiful question. I think there's no one thing for sure. I think that's my immediate thought. I think really holding the question, what does my leadership need to be to meet the needs of children today? I think teachers over the next year are going to play a role unlike any other year that I have known. It's going to be the most significant year to be a teacher, because children are going to have so many needs that are new. They're going to come back. There's going to be fear. There's going to be anxiety. There's going to be learning gaps. And I would say my advice, if anything, would be really take the lead of your kids. Listen to them. Ask them what they need. And then mobilize a community of people to really help meet those needs. And never underestimate how your kids will be able to help each other. I think we've seen that in beautiful ways. So again, the service-based ecosystem introduced me many years ago to the concept of many-to-many. And I can still visualize the first time I saw it, all these dots with lines connected everywhere. Think of your classroom, I would say, Shivani, as dots with lines connected everywhere. It's not all the lines connected to you standing in front of the class, but you really enabling people to connect lines to each other and help each other. And again, same things, create safe spaces, let kids talk about what they need, and really openly ask for help along the way to meet the needs of your kids.
Thank you, Shaheen. We'll take one more question from Vishal. He says, while technology has made education more accessible, it has also bombarded children with a lot of information, leading to reduced attention span and indecisiveness when it comes to choosing a path for their lives. How do we inspire such confused children to navigate their way around so much information?
Yeah, it's such a good question. I don't know, I'm such a believer that we just need to like reduce screen time and not have our kids just only be on their screens, but go back to the things that we know were so important and formative for children, just play and spending time together and being able to look at another human being and talk to them directly and not like text them. I think one is that just the balance of like, what are the different things that children do in their lives, with technology being really important, but not being the only piece. And I think the second is, at least what has helped me a lot has been just finding, there've been different practices at different times in my life, but finding the practices that help you process. You know, I think if you're constantly just absorbing information, you don't have the time and space to actually make sense of, but what's my own opinion? How is this impacting me? Like, I think we often tell our kids, and when I used to teach, I used to always tell kids, like, the experience you have really matters much less than what you take from that experience, right? I can sit through a very boring lecture and learn more life lessons from that boring lecture than from the best professor, if my orientation is to make sense of how I'm experiencing my life. So I think teaching kids how to reflect, how to make sense of things, how to step back, how to choose what they look at, like, these are the skills that I think are going to become very important.
Yeah. Thank you so much. For bringing awareness into awareness. And there is probably one question from Rohit that seems to be in sync with what you're talking about. In times of emergency like this, we tend to prioritize the immediate short-term fixes like children are not being able to attend school, so let's start online classes. Then before we know, there's the next emergency demanding our immediate attention again. So it's the classic challenge that long-term important work, which is subtler, often gets sidelined. What are some of the longer-term aspects that you're seeing which we should be paying attention to during this pandemic from the lens of education?
Yeah, such a good question. And I can resonate a lot with that tension. There's almost a sense of guilt in focusing on anything longer term when the immediate seems so urgent right now, right? Like, can I help connect somebody who might be able to get a hospital bed or an oxygen cylinder, or there's just an overwhelming number of immediate pieces. I think the first thing is just like overcoming that guilt and creating space in your own day to step back and to be focused on the future. And that itself is not the easiest thing to do. But I think it's so important, because I think if we don't do it, we will push back additional crises and challenges that will unfold in the future just because we haven't had the time and space to prepare for them. What are those things? I think, again, it's conceptualizing, like, what is this new form of education? Like, you know, so to go back to just some of the things I said, like, are we expanding how we think about the purpose of education? If we're doing that, then what is a blended approach to get there? Thinking through what is best done online, what is best done in person, thinking about who are the people that I can leverage to be the new teachers in this world. And then, of course, thinking about what is it going to take to prepare my team, my people, my country for this new reality. So I think it's a little bit of like starting with really deeply grounding ourselves in the why, like a commitment that we will not go back to how it was. We will use this as an opportunity to reimagine. We'll hold on to that even when schools reopen, life starts to open up as it inevitably will. The second part, once we're grounded in the why, is really the what. So what is that model of blended learning? And then I think spending a lot of time on the how. How are we going to upskill ourselves, each other, mindsets, skills to be able to embrace this new reality?
Thank you, Shaheen. And it may be of interest for you and the viewers to know that on 30th May, Awaken Talks will host another educator, Naveen Amarasuriya, and he runs the Contentment Foundation of Singapore. So we may get to hear more about the subtle values there as well. Thank you so much for spending time with us. And I will be handing over to Rohit, who has a surprise in store for us. But before that, I would like to take this opportunity to thank every viewer and also our Awaken Talks Rockstar volunteer team. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone. Shaheen, Nisha, and Krishnan. This was such a beautiful conversation. So many gems to pick on. So many interesting questions, and I think subtle points of view, which I feel a need to sort of go back and think more. I really, just if I were to offer one, I really loved the point which you said, which was, I think, so amazing for me, which you said that it's not the actual experience, but how you are oriented in that experience and how you reflect and how you basically whatever. So it's I think on a broader level, I see it as like you can't control the circumstances of the life, but how you process that inwardly, it's like how you respond to that stimulus is what it makes all the difference. And I think Viktor Frankl said, and that's where we are, our freedom lies. So thank you so much, Shaheen, for all the beautiful work which you are doing. So now there's like, as Nisha said, there's time for like a small surprise, which actually not me, but some of our youngest volunteers have put together for you. They have done a fantastic job, but we were sort of a bit tardy at the end trying to put it together. So we'll just roll with it. And I think you will figure out, but just for our audience, it's actually, Shaheen we have been very inspired by all your like multifaceted skills, and one of it includes like a heart of poetry, and we saw one of your poems which was like so beautiful and it resonated with so many of us, which was called Get and Give. So it's like few of our young volunteers actually sort of creating a rap song out of that. So here it is, and I'll just put it up on screen in a moment.
Thank you.
The poem is about two characters. One is called Get and one is called Give. So this is what Get says to Give and what Give taught Get. Get said to Give, "In order to live, just take what you can. Be rich, dearest man. Learn to grab and to claw. Always want more, more, more. And don't stop to think what you are wanting for. Be rich, man. Be cool. Send your kid to a school where he will grow up to be a rich get just like me."
Then Give interrupted, "Get, stop, Get, please stop. All this talk of just making up to the top makes me giddy and dizzy and fizzy. I'm sick, you're up to no good, Get. I know all your tricks. You're making these people think love can be bought, that happiness tickets is money abroad. I know your type, Get. I used to be you till I stumbled on giving and what it can do. And that is what I must share here with you. I used to feel good, Get, just giving away some old clothes, the torn ones, the jeans that were frayed. But one day a child said that he dreamed he could play with a new toy, not my giveaway. So I went out and bought Get a shirt that was cool, thinking about what he'd wear after school. And the toy car I bought him, I'm shiny bright blue, I thought of what 6-year-old boys like to do. And the smile that he gave me, Get, that smile, it was real, so real that my heart didn't know how to feel.
And the next day while walking, I saw a small child. She asked for some money. Her hair was quite wild. And when I said no, she pointed afar to a coconut vendor behind all the cars. I followed her zigzag across Mumbai Love Street. We sat down with coconut on dusty charred seats. Just me and the little girl sipping away. A sliver of joy had slipped in my day. And as we were chatting about things that she chose, a man not too far watched and then quietly rose. And then came towards us and almost ashamed, gave a bright shiny apple and left as he came. When you see Get, you see Get. When you start to give, you pave roads for the others to change how they live.
When you first start to look Get, it may be a haze, but many are giving, you will be amazed. The tree, how it gives off its fruits and its shade. The carpenter gives off the wood that he's made. The teacher, she gives every student her right. The puppy, he fills every heart with delight. The farmer, he gives up his hard-earned new crop. The sun, he gives us light till the moon says to stop. The temple and mosque really say we are one. The swing takes us high up and down, kind of fun. And music, she gives us a world that is free. And dreams, how they teach us just what we can be. And dreams, how they teach us just what we can be. So I watched Get, I watched, and I learned how to give. How to always have hope, how to love and forgive. How to compare myself, to feel thank, to want less. Get, I learned to share more, Get, I learned to feel blessed. Get, I learned to share more, Get, I learned to feel blessed. Get, I learned to share more, Get, I learned to feel blessed.
Oh, so beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you, Shine, on behalf of all our young ones. And maybe we'll just take a few moments of silence and gratitude to close, and so that we are able to see and honor all these beautiful acts of generosity which keep our life going, and maybe have the heart to not just only give our leftover toys, but to have the heart, big heart, to, you know, even just give our away our new ones, which so many of your stories and your life has shown us. Thank you. A few moments of silence. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks and continue the conversation. Thank you all.
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.